True North Disability Planning was founded by Eric Jorgensen. One of his biggest challenges was how to respond when asked, "What do you need?" by his disabled son's case manager or other professionals. This was especially true as he was trying to prepare for the transition of his son from high school and into adult services. Eric couldn't find a lot of information and nothing that clearly spelled out that this is what you need to do and how you go about doing it. So he created Roadmaps. Roadmaps is available for every state, and it clearly spells out exactly what needs to be accomplished with links to where you need to go. And whenever possible, he also included all the forms that you will need to submit in order to be successful. Visit their website at truenorthdisabilityplanning.com to receive 15% off your state roadmap using code NAV15, N-A-V-15. Again, that's truenorthdisabilityplanning.com and enter NAV15 at checkout to receive 15% off your roadmap. Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Coffee with Caregivers. I'm your host, Jess Ronnie, and today I'm excited to introduce to you Crystal Polk. Crystal Polk is a therapist at Better Tomorrow Therapy. She has four children, including a child with disabilities, which led her to be the creator of Better Tomorrow Therapy, which specializes in helping special needs families process and work through some common issues, such as delegating for help, not asking for help, and a very common one that we all experience, burnout. She also had a role in the Unseen documentary, which is where I first became familiar with her work. I know you're really going to enjoy this episode, especially her tangible tips for how to mitigate some of these common issues that parent caregivers often face. And to stay connected with all the things that we have going on at the Lucas Project, please check out thelucasproject.org. And as always, please sign up for our newsletter. It is short and sweet. We send it out once a month, and it just has a short synopsis of all the things that we have going on, including a description about our Caregivers Cove, a free supporter group that we offer on Facebook. And a big perk that we're excited to offer in the new year will be free virtual therapy sessions through this supporter group. We also have a supporter database at thelucasproject.org, and that currently hosts over 200 resources specifically designed for the parent caregiver. We have resources like respite, residential options, therapy, books, podcasts, films, you name it. Go ahead and check that out. And if you're a part of the supporter group, you get 50% off your first month. So that price goes from $5 down to $2.50. We also are excited to be launching a couple of respite initiatives in the new year, and you will want to hear all about those in our newsletter as well. And I think that about covers it. As always, I love to hear what you think about these episodes. So rate, review, reach out, leave a comment, send me an email with any guest suggestions that you might have. I love it all. And now, introducing Crystal Polk. Welcome, Crystal.
Hi, hello.
Well, thanks for joining me today. Can you just give an overview of the work that you are accomplishing? And again, in particular, as it relates to parent caregivers and how you became interested in this work?
Of course. So, in the beginning of my interest of helping the parent caregiver population, I decided that there needs to be more focused because the family dynamic was being ignored. And as a mental health provider, I have tons of friends in the field, and I leaned into them when my own family was struggling with a child having extra resources in our home, taking our kiddo to the hospital frequently, fighting with the school district for accommodations. And as a parent myself, I felt this increased anxiety and overwhelm. And I really was looking around like, what kind of resources are there? Because we have resources for specific populations, such as those veterans coming home from war. We know exactly what kind of resources they may need just based on prior history. And we do this amazing job with certain populations like postpartum mothers who we can identify and we know what to screen for, we know what to look for. But we didn't do this for this population, the parent caregiver population. And I thought that's so important to address. So I started paying attention to this and I started talking to people and I started calling people in my state. I called my ethics board, I called my social work board. And I was like, who is leading this conversation in regards to helping these families who have such high stress, specifically as being a caregiver, as a parent to a child with medical complexities, disabilities? And it turns out there wasn't a lot going on and the conversation wasn't happening very often, or at least nearby where I was. And coming around to those resources was really challenging. And if I can't find it as a mental health professional, I could imagine it was way more challenging for other people. So I decided for my own mental well-being and for others, I needed to kind of just navigate the field and create some sort of practice to support a foundation of practical things that we can do as a society and as a mental health professional. Like, this is the best way I could help this population.
Let's lean into what you said about the lack of conversation surrounding parent caregivers. Why is that, do you think? Why aren't we talking about this as a society? You know, I even understand like birth to 18, like, okay, you have a child, you're supposed to raise your child, you kind of wrap your mind around like, I'm going to be sleep deprived. My life is going to, my self-interests are going to have to kind of take a step back to raise this child. But then post 18, like, we're still not having those conversations either about these parent caregivers who are continuing to care for their children into their 60s, 70s, 80s. Why the lack of conversations? And I think we have both catapulted this narrative a little bit to the forefront with the Unseen documentary. You can't ignore it quite like you used to be able to, but why are people so scared to talk about this?
I think it's a difficult conversation because it's confusing, right? And then there's the systems are broken and stacked against these families. I think that if our communities started to pay attention to the needs that really are a community need, like we need to focus on the larger community, that we would have to reflect on what kind of current deficits are there. And correcting those would be difficult, right? It would be somebody stepping up and saying, we need more funding for this. We need changes here. We need to raise concerns there. There's so many barriers in place. I think that it's just easier to overlook it. And I hate to be the person to word it that way, but it's just easier. It's easier just to assume a mom's a mom and she's just doing her motherhood. Mm-hmm. That's not happening. That's being a mother is completely different than being a caregiver. And I like to distinguish between the two because they're very different roles. You can be both. Two things can happen at the same time, but being a mother usually has this independent phase and chapter in their life. Usually that child, you can see, get some more independence themselves. And then that parenthood journey is full of freedom. And now they're playing pickleball on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily the case as a parent caregiver. So I think it's just easier for people to ignore. And that way they can focus on feeling more comfortable. And also, I think it's important to say that, you know, every state, you and I are in different states right now. So you have different systems put in place to help support families like yours. And I have completely different systems put in place. Some benefits to both, right? And doesn't mean one's better than the other. But I think that that's also a difficult conversation within our communities currently too.
Yeah, you see the sun in your state. That's a big benefit. I probably get more resources in my state, but see the sun.
I'm originally from Michigan. Remember, I used to be there.
And I lived in Tennessee for 7 years and they had nothing for families like mine. And we went back to the cold snow because those resources were so needed. You know, I've talked to mothers even who recoil at the term caregiver. Like they just can't wrap their minds around, no, I'm his mother or I'm her mother. I'm not a caregiver. And I think for me, something shifted in my thought process when I was like, yes, I just want to be his mother. I don't necessarily want to be his primary caregiver for the rest of my life. And then that almost gave me permission to start to look at future solutions and opportunities for him, because I thought, I just want to lean into being his mom. And of course, I'll be like a caregiver in some aspect for the rest of his life, but I don't want to be his primary caregiver anymore. And I think that only came as he aged and like as he went through puberty, he was really difficult. And I was able to kind of separate that in my head a little bit better. What do you think that hesitation is, even with parents who are like, I am not a caregiver, I'm a mom? Because in denying that caregiver part of yourself, I would argue we're almost like denying the fact that we need extra resources and support.
Yeah, I could go many ways with this. Everyone's feelings are valid. Let's start there.
You're the therapist.
But I would say it's going to be circumstantial for everybody. Let me do the opposite of that, actually. I'll give an example. A client might come to me and say how stressed, how, you know, they're burning out and how they have anxiety and depression. They're isolated. Now they have financial strain. They're worried about how their other kids are functioning and bonded with them. There's so many other things about their lives that they didn't understand and it didn't exist before this diagnosis. I'll put it like that. Well, now I can give them a sense of validation by saying, you're not failing. Nothing is different about your parenthood. You're doing great as a parent. It's the caregiving that's stressing you out. Mm-hmm. It's the role of all of the medical appointments, fighting the insurance and going to and from and navigating the systems, the many systems. And if you're in the world of caregiving at all, you know what I mean, the systems. It's helpful just to identify the word caregiver because it gives a completely different feeling attached to that. You're not overwhelmed about being a parent. You love this baby. You love this adult, but it's, you don't love, you know, changing diapers without help. Wouldn't it be nice to have respite and an extra set of hands? That part feels overwhelming, but asking for help as a parent is a little bit more difficult. Asking for help as a caregiver is a little bit easier. Is that what your experience was? Is that how you felt, that kind of like aha moment? Oh, this part I do need help with.
I think giving myself permission to call myself a caregiver gave myself permission to do a couple of things. Accept a paycheck for his care. Like now we live in Michigan, so I'm a paid caregiver for him. You don't do that as a mother. You're not given a paycheck. But when you're a caregiver, that makes sense. That's extra. Exploring those future opportunities and solutions for him, because as a caregiver, it's very detached from the emotional mother part of it. So it gave me permission to kind of move forward and do some planning that maybe my mother heart wasn't okay with, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes complete sense. But prioritizing your own experience above what others expect of you or what others perceive or what you think that they're thinking about you. That alone, these parents that I work with in particular, we spend a lot of time talking about not worrying about other people's judgment of our choices. And we spend a lot of time, you know, we can talk about self-care until, you know, every day for the rest of our lives. We can talk about it and it is important, but it's the other stuff that I think that a therapist, or really, you know, somebody you're trusting in a session, somebody that allows you to have a safe place to be vulnerable about what you're struggling with, your thoughts, your feelings, what current stressors are going on, and then problem solving that. And I think a lot of that is the acceptance, right? Maybe reframing how you perceive your family, how you perceive your future and what that might look like for you. So I'm so happy that your family has figured that out, like for everyone. So now everybody's going to thrive, right? Instead of the state of survival where you're struggling as a mom, quote, a mom who only is just doing a million extra things on top of typical motherhood. So good. I'm glad that you call yourself.
Well, thank you. I passed my therapy session, my type A firstborn personality. And even as you were talking, like giving yourself permission to not worry about what other people think, that is a form of self-care. Like, and I was on a webinar yesterday too, and about special needs in the holidays and the struggle with all the beautiful pictures and Instagram and Facebook of all the families doing the normal family things, you know, like ice skating, something we can't do with Lucas, or cookie decorating, something we can't do with Lucas. So, and allowing yourself to mute those accounts for a period of time. If they make you feel icky about your situation, just mute them, you know, through the holidays or for a couple of months if need be, and, you know, fill your feed with kittens, something that makes you happy. You are allowed to do that and not feel bad about your life, which I think social media is such a big trigger when it comes to feeling bad about our lives as special needs families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why we appreciate people like you. Is so we have somebody who's vulnerable and models what that really looks like in other people's homes. So kudos to you for being so open and for providing a sense of comfort for some other people who don't understand, right? Like, this is our norm as well. So it might feel different, might be different diagnoses, but not everybody is having that Christmas card of us on an ice rake. So,
right.
Yeah, we do need people who are brave enough to be vulnerable publicly, because it does serve such a good purpose. And I do reference it as, like, you know, at therapists, we bring it up quite frequently. We'll talk about other families that we publicly follow, and we will share stories and compare notes. The client and I might discuss ways where it feels relatable or maybe not relatable. And we'll use you guys as example, all those people who are publicly out there sharing their family's journey. And I think that's very, very honorable to be in the position where you guys are providing a sense of connection, and you don't even understand you're doing what you need to do for you. But it is a sense of comfort for so many people therapeutically.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I mean, a lot of what I do is therapy for myself. It's telling my story and processing my own emotions through, you know, social media posts and books that I write and documentaries that I make. And it's just processing. But I think there's value in that too.
Navigating the maze of disability benefits, resources, and services can be incredibly difficult because no two states are the same, and it doesn't seem like anything is ever written in plain language. You need a guide, someone who will help you understand what you might be eligible for and how to apply. That's what True North Disability Planning was created for. Eric Jorgensen started True North Disability Planning because he was frustrated with a lack of straight answers. Please let Eric be your special needs navigator. Visit their website at truenorthdisabilityplanning.com. NavRoadMap.com to receive 15% off your state roadmap using code NAV15, NAV15. Again, that's TrueNorthDisabilityPlanning.com and enter NAV15 at checkout to receive 15% off your roadmap.
So you, I'm sure, have spoken to hundreds of families at this point. What would you say the top three issues are for parent caregivers?
In terms of themes of issues and not diagnosis, I would say not asking for help and not understanding how to delegate. I spend a lot of time on delegation / asking for help. Identifying the warning signs of chronic burnout. And then I do activities that really focus on what's in our control, what's not in our control. So,
what are some of those warning signs for chronic burnout?
For everyone, it looks a little different, but for the most part, it could just be that physical strain that you feel, that heart racing, that anxiety feeling, but also it could look like isolation. It could just be somebody who's extra snappy and irritable. It could be not responding to text messages, but not because of depression, not because of anxiety, but because you're just so overwhelmed. The thought of doing anything else is just not doable. You're actually starting to disassociate and you're starting to pull back on things and people that make you feel good and make you feel usually, you know, they're important to you, but you're just pulling back. When there's extra conflict in the marriage, when there's additional arguments with the other siblings, it could look different for other people have different experiences, but if you're not really prone to anxiety, then maybe you can see that as a red flag. Oh, things are emotionally charged a lot lately. So I have to recognize, like, this is when it's important for me to really emphasize prioritizing my own mental well-being and delegating so much out. That looks like asking the neighbor, hey, my other kiddo has hockey at the same time as yours. Do you mind, you know, assisting? Our family is really busy currently. And they will say yes, 99% of the time. They know you're busy. They probably look at the situation with like a lot of empathy and they're probably willing to help out, or asking the teacher even. I've asked, a client to reach out to their teacher. They have a private school, not a public school situation, but to say like, hey, would you be willing to do A, B, and C to assist our family? And they agreed. And so just asking around the community, I know everyone's a part of those Facebook groups, and asking your local community, like what kind of additional resources, asking for help, who do you use as babysitter? I'm sure that without conversations, people feel stuck, they feel isolated. Asking your employer, if you work full-time, part-time, whatever that may be, hey, could I take some extra PTO? I'm going to start leaving at half hour early. I just need some time to myself. I'm really going through it. A lot of places are a lot more flexible because they understand our circumstances are really challenging sometimes. So just prioritizing your own needs. I actually just did this year. I have a lot going on in my personal life. So I kind of took focus on what needs to be done professionally. And now I have postponed a few things, other things. And moving forward, each season's different, right? So maybe in the spring, I'll pick back up some other focus, but I have delegated and paused things. And I think that's the only way we are going to be healthy as a parent caregiver, is by understanding your warning signs, having the self-awareness, like, oops, I'm showing my own symptoms. You don't have an understanding of what the problem could be, then you're not going to be able to problem solve. It's that self-awareness we're seeking. I don't know if that's too much information.
No, that's really good. And as you're talking, I'm thinking back to certain instances in my own life over the past year where I felt that anxiety rising. And my go-to reaction is to get angry, like, and try to control everything. And I've learned to recognize that in myself. Okay, you have way too much going on. What can we scale back on? And even in December, feeling this, this bubbling. So decided to take the entire month of January as a sabbatical. I'll do some writing, but I'm not going to take a single meeting in January because meetings stress me out. I have to put my makeup on and fix my hair. It's just like one more thing. And I know that about myself. Like, if I can take all interviews and meetings off my agenda in January, that will kind of give me that solitude to kind of process what can stay and what can go. But for the parent caregiver who's maybe listening and they're like, I am feeling that those symptoms of chronic burnout all the time. Mm-hmm. What would you say, like, frequency and duration? Are we talking like once a month you need to start thinking through how you can make your life a little bit more manageable? Or is this like a daily, weekly, I'm feeling this anxiety, like I'm close to having a panic attack? Mm-hmm. Or is it all of the above where you have to take stock of your life?
Yeah. Yes, all of the above. I am a huge advocate of writing things down. Maybe I'm biased because I'm a very visual person. I like to see things. I will show my clients images. They know. It's my norm. I like to show them exactly what's going on. So I think a wonderful thing for the listeners to know is, one, therapy is cool. It's fun to be in therapy. I might be biased, but it helps alleviate feelings of loneliness. It helps, gain some coping skills for anxiety, depression, and you can get a lot accomplished in that therapy session. You can figure things out. So you can find a therapist by, you know, using websites and looking at your insurance card, asking, you know, about what kind of coverage you have for mental health services. And then secondary, journaling is our original and go-to activity. So journaling, and it doesn't have to just be like, dear diary, today was hard. It could be a very productive journal. It could be a way to organize your thoughts. And I like to describe it as like dumping out that puzzle, right? And then we see it on the table, this huge puzzle full of different pieces, different colors. And then we sort through it one by one. This one looks purple, so I'll put it in the section of purple. This one looks like a corner piece. Let me put it over there in the corners, right? So we're organizing things and it feels less chaotic. Once we've organized it, for example, going back to this journal and organizing our thoughts and feelings, once I've organized it, then I can start to problem solve things with actionable steps. So this might be a way for me to say, okay, financially, here's what's on my mind. Okay, my marriage, here's what's on my mind. My career, here's what's on my mind. And we're writing down these little categories. Feels good seeing it organized. Okay, parenthood, medical, whatever it might be in your world. Don't use these categories verbatim. It could be different for everybody. These things underneath the category should be like, I'll make something up, financial. I need to pay my taxes, find a new accountant, whatever that might look like. And then you would have a little line next to it. Is this in my control, out of my control? Yeah. This is definitely in my control. Let's circle that and let's give it a deadline. So a deadline might be January 10th. That's probably pushing it, but maybe it should be December 15th. I don't know. So then you're looking at the other stuff. My son has some new behavior issues and it is a lot and it's impacting our family, or we have these other things going on that's exacerbating our family's stress level. So like maybe write all those things down, right? Or my husband doesn't clean the hair off the sink after he shaves, write that down, right? And then cross out everything that's in your control and out of your control. So maybe the solution should be to tell him, please clean up own mess. Okay, great. Now that that's done, moving on to the next agenda item. This is so simple. This organizes people's thoughts and feelings the same way that you would if you were writing down your holiday gift list, or if you were writing down your travel plans. You would write it down in different little subjects and you're breaking it down. Here's what I need to pack. Bring this, bring that. And it makes it feel like you have a sense of control. It gives you a sense of empowerment. It brings back a sense of peacefulness, knowing like, oh, if this thought keeps popping in my head and I can't control that, then I shouldn't give it too much energy. I don't want to allow that thought to spend too much time in my head. So we use different techniques to change that. There's different CBT techniques like thought stopping and cognitive reframing. But in short, if I'm going to be honest with you, we can do this on our own just by saying, okay, I acknowledge this thought, but I can't do anything about that. So let me just bring it back to the other things that I can focus on. Those things deserve my energy. Those things are productive and worthwhile. But me focusing on what kind of lifelong journey will my child's going to have when I'm here or not here, like maybe that doesn't deserve a lot of headspace right now on this random Tuesday. Maybe that should be an agenda item, like talk to attorney about things or problem solving, like talk to relatives about how they can be supportive or whatever that looks like for your family. Does this make sense how we're breaking it down and organizing things, and it feels like this despair and this chaos just kind of is more bite-sized, and then it feels more positive. Like, oh, here's all these things that used to be overwhelming that I can actually focus on changing. And I have this power to do so if I do it the right way.
Oh, 100%. I mean, okay. I have a daily list, a weekly list, and kind of a yearly indefinite list. And that, like, where's my child going to live forever was on that yearly indefinite list for years. But then it kind of got moved to like the weekly list as I started to work through some of the things. And then it became like a daily thing. But I'm I brain dump every night after dinner. I come into my office for about 10 minutes. I look at my weekly list and my indefinite list, and I move like actionable items over to the next day's daily list. And then I just work off of that daily list, and it does. It makes it feel like more manageable. It makes it feel like I am empowered in my own life and I have control over my situation. And things that even go on that daily list every single day are walk, stretch, read for 30 minutes, because there's something in me that needs to see these things. And I know the value of taking care of myself. And so it has to be on that list, and I will do it. And then I can crumple it up and throw it away at the end of the day. And I love that feeling. Like, I did my whole list, and not making it like so overwhelming that you can't get through it. You know, my daily list has 7 or 8 items on it, but it includes like make dinner, do laundry. Just because I'm a weirdo like that. I like to cross my things off and move on. Okay, so I want to pivot a little bit. I have one final question here. What do you feel like would be the most optimal way for society, or like just a regular person, to help a special needs family? Like, yeah, they're looking at their neighbor and they're like, I know their life seems really overwhelming. I know they have this child with disabilities. I just don't know what to do. I don't really feel comfortable offering respite because I'm not familiar with the diagnosis, and that just feels kind of scary. Where should that individual begin as they see a special needs family? How should they begin to step in and help out?
Yeah. I have a few clients that are telehealth that have their neighbor come over and keep an eye on their kiddo while they do sessions from their garage or from their back porch. And that would be a great idea. Obviously, I'm going to advocate for therapy because I am a believer and I see it help so many people. So finding a therapist that you like, that you trust, and then moving forward with scheduling things. And if you're an outsider looking at a family, maybe encouraging them to, you know, delegate things to me. Like maybe I could pull out your bins. Maybe I could rake your leaves. Ways to just take things off of their list of the to-do list. I think that people feel exhausted every day. And that feeling of exhaustion isn't just the physical, but the emotional and mental load that they're carrying. And crossing things off of that list is directly connected to decreasing that mental load. It's going to decrease the anxiety. It's going to impact overall the family's well-being. That's what I'm going to put on the test, is having people validate their experience. Like, it's okay to feel exhausted. You know, like I'm a parent and I don't have any children with additional needs or medical complexities, and I'm also exhausted. So providing that validation for that family, but maybe saying, how can I help? Like, what about if I do this, can I bring you, like in your other podcast, I was just listening to it and you guys were discussing like tacos or pizza, which one should I bring over on Tuesday? That's exactly what I would say. That's, you know, delegation, getting things off of your to-do list, because it helps not just the physical load, but that emotional / mental load as well.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can people find out more about your practice? And do you offer virtual therapy sessions, or is it just in person?
I am currently 100% virtual, and I can only work, just because of insurance purposes, with those who are residents of South Carolina. Like, you have to have an address in South Carolina. They can find me on Psychology Today or my website, bettertomorrowtherapy.com. Thanks for having me. I'm always nervous to do these.
No, it was good.
Thanks for joining us today on Coffee with Caregivers. And if you'd like to be considered as a guest for a future episode, please reach out at jess@thelucasproject.org. And as always, let's do what we do best. Just keep living.